Welcome back to Keeping It Cool, a podcast about climate innovation. I'm your host, Lena, and today we have our first ever guest on the show, Nisha Desai. So Nisha is the founder and CEO of Intention, a startup empowering regular people to invest for both climate impact and financial returns. In today's conversation, we'll talk about how Nisha came up with this startup idea, what her North Star is as a social entrepreneur, and how the company has changed direction as it's grown. We'll also talk about Nisha's career trajectory, but before we start, I want to give a little more background about Nisha. She's a through-and-through expert in the energy sector with a long track record of innovation in the energy industry. She worked at six energy-related startups, including Ridge Energy Storage, Tessera Solar, and Actual Sun, where she was the co-founder and CEO. In addition to her entrepreneurial work, Nisha has held leadership roles at NRG Energy, serving as Vice President of Distributed Generation, and as a management consultant at Booz Allen Hamilton. She has also been deeply involved in the climate tech and clean energy ecosystem, serving on the boards of Greentown Labs, Bike Houston, and the Advisory Council of the Houston Advanced Research Center. Most recently, she became a strategic advisor at Solidec, supporting their mission of developing technology to capture carbon and manufacture chemicals using only air, water, and renewable energy. Nisha previously served on the board of the Puerto Rico Public Power Authority and the Texas Renewable Energy Industries Alliance. She holds an MBA from Harvard Business School and a BA in Political Science and Economics from Yale University. I hope that background sparked your interest, and please stay tuned to hear my conversation with Nisha. Hi, Nisha. Welcome on the show. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you got involved in the energy industry?
Sure, absolutely. And thanks so much for inviting me to be on the show and to express some curiosity about my background. So first of all, just want to say that, you know, there's a lot of people who are in school right now, and they're in school really with this very strong vision of what they want to do when they get out. Yeah, when I was in school, I wanted to be a doctor, right? 100% guaranteed I was going to be a doctor. And then it was just like being in that environment, found that there was more to the world than just being a doctor, right? And lots of other things
completely
that really excited me. But as part of that, the thing that was pretty constant was a desire to do something that was like good for the world. And so then it's like, okay, so how does that get you into the energy industry? Well, I had this opportunity to go actually be an intern in a management consulting company. And then I decided I was going to take a full-time job with them. And they asked me, like, which group do you want to join? And because I had been an intern, I'd had some exposure to the different kind of business groups within the firm and their specialty areas. And I was very struck by someone who had presented on behalf of the energy group, right? Because they're presenting to all the interns, right? And was like, hey, I'm kind of different because I'm not an MBA. I have a master of public policy. And there's a lot of public policy issues that actually come up in the energy industry. And so that was like, that was it, right? You know, so as someone who wanted to do something that was good for the world, that kind of intersection with public policy or public benefit was really interesting to me. So that's it. I said, fine, I'd join the group. And so I ended up becoming a management consultant in their energy practice at a time when the power industry was changing dramatically in the United States. It was deregulating, restructuring in terms of like who owned the generation, who owned the transmission. So I found that fascinating, to be honest with you. Went to business school, still wanted to remain in energy. So I came to Houston to work for this company called Enron. A lot of other stories there. That would be a whole other podcast. Suffice it to say, I got to Enron and got really excited about what Enron was doing on the innovation side. And so it was like, hey, I'm going to go join whatever Enron's next startup is. And the startup happened to be in water. And then I left to join a .com that was serving the energy industry. And then I went to like another new business and another one. And so that ended up kind of tracking me not just into energy and infrastructure, but also what was new and different, right? And what was new and different was generally about making things cleaner, greener, cheaper, right? More efficient. So I was working on energy storage way back when, like 2002. I was, you know, one of the
first people to be
working on solar. So yeah, pretty early.
You're really ahead of the curve there. And I think that's also super interesting because I think a lot of people don't think about the social impact that the energy industry can have. It's not, you know, a direct 1-2 for a lot of people. So I really like how you've weaved that into your career. And you're really ahead of the game on the solar and
battery storage for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was working on energy storage, it wasn't even batteries. We were working on compressed air, energy storage, dealing with, you know, how can we kind of force air underground and then put it at high pressure. And then when we bring it back out, it's under pressure and can run a turbine. And that's how we were going to do energy storage. 20 some odd years later, people are thinking about how do we take CO2 and force it underground so we can restore the planet. So I didn't know that there would be things like from the technical side that would be relevant to just kind of the way the world is today.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I kind of want to fast forward to now. So I know that you are the founder, CEO of your startup Intention. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what your company does?
Yeah. So what the company is doing, it's creating a way to democratize climate impact investment. So it's really making climate impact investment accessible to regular people. So that's what we're doing.
Cool. And what was kind of your inspiration to create Intention?
Well, that's a good question. So a few years ago, I was working on retirement planning with my husband. And, you know, I was just looking at my portfolio and I'm like, there's nothing in here. It's kind of a boring portfolio, right? You know, it's like the financial advisor is chatting about like 60-40 or 50-50, like stocks to bonds. And I'm thinking, that's nuts. There's nothing in here that's anything like what I've worked on professionally. So when I was working on energy storage, there was like project finance associated with that. When I was working on solar, there was project finance associated with that. Even when I was at NRG, we were doing energy as a service and we're constantly trying to get capital so that we could provide our customers with super efficient energy behind the meter without them having to lay out a big capital investment. So there's always this investment and capital thing going on. And so I knew what their returns look like and kind of what the profiles look like and was like, there's nothing like that in my own portfolio. Why is that? Right.
Yeah.
I'm the longtime insider in this industry and, you know, I'm super comfortable with those types of returns or what the opportunity is. And I kind of know the space. Why isn't anything like that in my portfolio?
You kind of wanted to see what you worked on be reflected in, you know, your assets and what you were holding, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I started to really kind of look into it, it's like, it's actually, because these assets are not really accessible to people from an investment perspective. But then, you know, the other things that are going on in the market is like one person coming into a deal, it doesn't make sense, but a lot of people could pool money together and then create like a big enough check to make a difference in a deal or a project or a company. And so with the advent of digital technologies, that should be a lot easier. But then there are just other structural barriers. And I felt that the thing that was really missing or the opportunity was to create something where regular people could invest in the same type of stuff that I had worked on kind of in an industry perspective, but with the same risk, returns, and impact profile that the professionals get, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That was the inspiration to create Intention and democratize climate impact investment.
Yeah, so that kind of leads naturally into the next question about what really democratizing climate impact investment means. What is impact investing? How does that differ from philanthropy? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
All right, let's start with impact investing, right? So impact investing, is it different from philanthropy? It could be, right? I mean, from a philanthropic perspective, you know, again, you give money to a charity or not-for-profit with the expectation that they're going to create some type of social benefit, right? So you could call that an investment. For the way we think about impact investment is like, that's a part of the equation. But yeah, we are investing for profit, right? We're investing for returns. And I think part of the insight from just having had that long background in energy, alternative energy, climate type stuff is that, yeah, no, there are definitely areas where if you know what you're doing and you understand how the markets work and you understand kind of the trends and the technologies, you can definitely find places where you can take that risk and do some good because these things that we're investing from a thematic perspective are really about creating better outcomes for the planet.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's what we're doing. And then in terms of impact as an investor, it's about enabling whatever you're investing in to have impact. And it has to do with secondary versus primary investment, right? So again, secondary investing, somebody invested in the company, allowed it to grow, it IPO'd, and now there's a secondary market for the shares. That's called the stock market. Primary investing is when you're investing directly into the company, like probably at an earlier stage and at a time when that capital can really be used for them to grow. So that's the way we're defining like impact. It's where we're looking for impact. It's where our money kind of makes a difference, where the active investing makes a difference, right? So
that makes sense. So intention is allowing other people to do this kind of thing besides, you know, just typical venture capital investors or angels or things like that.
Absolutely. And so the other thing, though, is that that is the whole realm of private investing. And so private investing, that's the bit that's been typically off limits to regular people, right? You have to, you know, it's a lot riskier because there's not liquidity. Again, having said that, if there's ways to invest small amounts of money or there's opportunities to kind of get in there and get some of the returns and the ability to do good, hopefully while doing well.
Yeah.
But that private investment space, again, that's also been, like I said, off limits to regular people. And it's because there's rules about who can invest in private companies. Generally, the government has these requirements that you have to be an accredited investor, which means you have to have a certain level of wealth. But then the venture capital companies are the ones that are really in that space. Really, if you want to be an LP in a venture capital company, then you need to meet their minimum check sizes, which could be millions and millions of dollars. And so
that makes sense.
It gets shut out for regular people.
How are you getting around that with intention?
So we have partnered with a platform called PIN, which is called Power in Numbers, and they allow us to set up this thing called an investment club. An investment club, everybody is part of the decision making. So it's different than selling securities. So this is like SEC rules.
That makes sense.
But as an investment club means that it's treated differently. If you live in certain states where the state rules align with the SEC rules, then you don't have to be an accredited investor to participate in the investment club. We can structure it in such a way that the amount of money that you have to invest into the fund is less than you can afford to lose. The way I describe it, it's less than a weekend in Las Vegas. So that's how we're democratizing. Again, making it accessible to people with much smaller check sizes and in a way that where they don't have to be accredited investors. And then that governance piece is also a piece of the democratization. If everyone is part of the investment process, everyone has a vote in terms of where the investment club puts the money. So that is a really important part. And doesn't matter whether you've invested the minimum or invested the maximum, it's one person, one vote. So that's the other element of democratization. So
that makes sense. I kind of want to zoom out a little bit and talk about the climate tech industry in general. So as we're recording this, it's February 2025. There have been a lot of recent changes, particularly in the US under the Trump administration. There's been a loss of federal government support for renewable energy and climate tech. So how does that kind of change your approach to climate impact investment that you're having with intention?
So that's a really good question. There's a need for kind of refinement of strategies. I think the first thing is, look, there's absolutely strong conviction that there's a long-term global megatrend, that there's a demand for lower and lower carbon fuels over time and addressing climate and resilience. We don't see that changing over the long term, so it's still a very impactful area to be in and with fundamental long-term business opportunities. If you think about an investment cycle is way longer than 4 years, right? So there we go. Having said that, there's definitely things we're definitely seeing. It's harder for companies in general to raise money. What that means for us is, you know, we're very small investors. So, you know, we have to invest in something and kind of with the expectation that they'll be able to meet some milestones and then raise additional money to go continue to develop and build out their technologies. And so we have to be a lot more careful in terms of what the commercialization cycles look like. You know, there are some things which are going to be really, really hot, but that are probably way too big and risky for us, right? You know, so nuclear probably is still going to be hot, right? But that probably isn't something we're going to look at. There's other things where, you know, they had more of a business case that was very, very dependent on there being these massive government subsidies. And so now it's like, okay, that's no longer something we can really look at. We have to really look for things that have a path to being commercial as the subsidies kind of fade away. And actually, that's probably a good thing. You know, the way that wind and solar have been really successful is that they have come down the cost curve to the point where they are incredibly competitive. They beat out fossil fuels in many parts of the world. They don't need to be subsidized anymore. So that's good. That's what we should want, because when that happens, like, things like really, really take off. And now projecting what that's going to be, you know, that takes a lot more time and effort and thinking.
That makes a lot of sense. Can imagine that you've learned a lot through kind of seeing a lot of these cycles happen, watching some of those cost curves come down and kind of changing what you're investing in. Thinking about other things that you've learned as being a founder, I know that you pivoted a few times with Intention, and the original name of your company was Inuity Holdings. So can you talk about some of these pivots and what you learned from them?
Yeah, Inuity basically stands for energy annuity. So the original concept was, okay, what we can do is we can create like a virtual kind of financial product out of the characteristics of wind and solar. And I called it an energy annuity. Then that kind of pivoted to becoming, okay, instead of a virtual investment product, how about an actual investment product, but in actual solar panels, but just not on your roof, and as part of kind of a bigger installation. So you invest in an individual solar panel. And then we were doing customer discovery around that. We found that people were far more interested in multiple digit returns rather than single digit returns, which, look, I mean, wind and solar, it's infrastructure. It has single digit returns. So it's like, okay. And there was evidence that there was a lot more appetite from customers for getting exposure to that tech, you know, the tech stories and things that can really have like massive impact, even though they're a lot riskier. So we ended up changing to climate tech as an asset class, and then kind of found this investment group model that we could use. So yeah, we've certainly pivoted a lot, taking some of the feedback that we've gotten from the market as we were doing our customer discovery, and, you know, eventually getting to a point where we could launch this climate tech venture fund. Yeah, it's still like a minimum viable product, but so we've managed to get to where we wanted to go. Some of the things I learned, right? One, I really hate the word pivot.
Yeah.
Let me tell you why. So when I was a kid, I was in marching band. When you pivot, you're going in a completely different direction. And I never felt like any of these like business model changes or anything like that were really taking us in a different direction when it came to our original mission, right? Which was about giving regular people the chance to invest somehow, put their money to work in this kind of stuff and space, right? So it was really more about refinement. So not hard pivots, but more kind of like, you know, just kind of going around boulders, or, you know, changing your direction slightly to,
I do think that
going in the same North Star.
Yeah, right? I think the word pivot has definitely taken on a life of its own, but I think most startups pivot at the beginning, you know, whether it be small pivots, big pivots, and, you know, even small changes in their business plan. I think, you know, they might categorize that as a pivot if they're seeing something isn't working. So I think it makes sense that you had to go through that.
Going back to that concept of the North Star, that you're actually pivoting to try and get to that.
Yeah, there's one goal.
Yeah. So for me, it was that kind of something that would get regular people to participate. And there's actually, you know, a bigger reason for that. And that's like going back to who I am as a social entrepreneur, there's this underlying thesis that the more, if people have some skin, if they have some investment, they have some skin in the game. And then the more people that have skin in the game, the more people actually care about climate. And then, you know, if this becomes big enough, we could use this really as a tool for mass market behavior change. But I will have to confess, right? I mean, Intention, we've launched the fund, we've got like a small committed group of investors, but like it is not going to scale to be like the Robin Hood of climate tech investment. So, you know, I do have to think about the underlying why. It's still going to be something I can achieve.
Yeah. Thinking about that and saying that big goal is probably not where Intention is going to go, I'm curious, what is next for you and the company?
So there is something valuable here in terms of, again, a way to get regular people looking at climate tech, investing in climate tech. I do think about like, okay, how can I personally have bigger impact, right? And so maybe that means that, you know, Intention Climate Fund is just like one of the many things that I do, right? Or there's something else, which is maybe in a completely different space, but where I can, you know, go and have that bigger mass impact that I was like really hoping that, you know, I'd be able to achieve my career. Maybe that's through board work, right? Or maybe that's through, you know, another kind of complementary startup. So
yeah,
we're kind of going through that right now.
I think that's a good point, that there are a lot of different ways to make impact. It doesn't necessarily have to be through entrepreneurship, but it can be through a lot of different vehicles. And it seems like, you know, what you've created with intention has made a difference for the people who you've invested in and who've been able to invest with you. So I think that's super exciting. I just have one final question for you, which is, how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about intention or want to learn more about you?
Yeah, so you can always find me on LinkedIn, and I'm sure you'll have some show notes or whatever, where you can put a tag to my LinkedIn profile. If they want to reach out to me via email, my email address is nisha@investwithintention.io.
Great. I'll put that in the description as well.
Awesome.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and it was really great to talk to you. You have such an impressive background, and it's always great to hear about people working on actual impactful startups, I think. And so it's great to get the perspective of a social entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciated it.